blessings upon him. Help us, Father, this night we might learn some things that will be helpful to us. We appreciate everything you do for us. We love you so much. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Okay, guys. Everybody got a handout?
Yes.
Okay. I understand last week you all couldn't write on them. It was in color, right?
Yeah,
like
writing on a piece of wax paper.
Yeah. Okay, I gave you an assignment for last week. Anybody do some investigation?
Philippians 3.
Right. Philippians 3:16. Somebody read it.
3:13. 3:13, Stephen.
Yes.
Brethren, I count it not my brethren, I count not myself to apprehended. But this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, I reach forth unto those things which are before.
Okay, and I ask you to go do some study on that passage and the word forgive. What did anybody find out?
Everything he was putting in the background and looking forward to what's ahead. He wasn't anything he'd accomplished or anything he'd done bad. He was putting it behind him as well as his credentials that he had mentioned earlier, and was his aspirations was what was going to occur in the future. He just worked for the Lord in that direction, not looking backwards.
Right. Okay.
He could also have been referring to Judaizers that were trying to live under the old law.
Right. Anybody do a study on the word forgetting?
Means to neglect.
Excuse me?
To neglect.
I didn't hear what you said.
Neglect.
Neglect.
N-E-G-L-E-T-T. Neglect.
Oh, neglect. I'm just ignoring you, Mark.
No longer care for.
Now, let me say this to you. That's an interesting word that Mark used, because if the word neglect is how you would translate that in that text. By the way, sometimes the word that's used here in the text, epilanthotomai, in some places it is translated forget. However, in this context, let me ask you this. How have you all heard this passage preached all your life?
Leaving the world and God to Christ.
Yeah. What else? What kind of sermons have you preached on this passage, or heard preached on this passage?
Well, it's, mostly it's about pursuing things, not giving up, you know, or not dying with your boots on. Basically, each day Paul woke up and started anew, or he didn't rest on his laurels, so to speak.
Yeah. The reason I ask you all to study this passage, here's how it's preached all my life. I heard it said that just like Paul, we need to forget the past and go on to the future. That sounds great. Would you agree?
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yes.
Now, here's my question for you. Is that humanly possible?
No, we don't have a delete button where it's just...
We don't have a delete button, or we can't erase the hard drive. And I pointed that out to you all just to give you something to study, because times we teach sermons telling people you got to forget the past, and then they're beating themselves up, feeling full of guilt, saying, I can't forget the past, which, by the way, they can't. And so we need to go back and look at this text, and it was interesting that the word that was used, Mark used the word neglect. This word here can mean the idea of I don't count things as important anymore. It can mean the idea of I just no longer care for them. And Paul is saying, by the way, one of the things that Paul no longer cares for in the text, keep it in context. Anybody have a shotgun?
Yes.
I'm going to shoot this lady on this computer. Trial. I don't know what you do to get rid of it. What's the context of Philippians 3?
Well, he says, if you're going to boast in the flesh, I could boast even more. And but whatever it was, his being a Pharisee or the Hebrew of Hebrews, all that stuff, he counted as refuse, as dung, that he might win Christ. So
that's right. Paul is addressing some people who are making false accusations against him. And in verses 3 through 6, Paul talks about all these things that he had by birth, by nationality, by education, and yet he says, you know what, all those things that were a big deal to me in life, and I was focused on until the road to Damascus, and all of that was what it was all about. All of a sudden, that stuff means nothing to me anymore, and I count that as totally unimportant. I neglect that. I don't choose that to be important anymore. Why? Because it's all now about Christ. And so, just wanted you to take that and look at that word some, and I really want to urge you all, as you teach it, you ladies, you teach it in children's class, you teach it in ladies' class, guys, if you teach it in the Bible, you preach it, be careful that we don't teach the Bible in a way that leaves somebody with the impression that they have to do something that's possible, and then they go beat themselves up and are miserable. It's a horrible thing to put on people mostly. And so that's the reason I asked you to study that passage. Any comments, any thoughts? Quickly.
Paul himself many times recalled the former sins that he had committed before he was a Christian.
When's the last time he did, Mark?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. 1 Timothy, he mentions it, and then 2 Timothy, he's more focused towards, he doesn't say any of that anymore in 2 Timothy.
No. It's interesting, you know, that he talks about that he was a blasphemer, persecutor, injurious. He was the chief of sinners when he's talking to Timothy. So the point is that late in Paul's life, and he's about ready to be executed, had he forgotten all this stuff?
No.
No, he hasn't. So, anyway, that's just a thought for you. Didn't cost you a thing, okay? Now let's talk about leadership and authority. Mark, you got it up for me?
Yes.
Okay. Leadership and authority, let's go to the second slide. Here's my question for you. What's the immediate thing, what's your immediate reaction when you hear the word authority?
A tyrant.
Do what?
A tyrant.
A tyrant. What else?
Police.
Okay.
Being submissive to.
Here's the next thing I have on the slide. What comes to your mind? Is it something that's positive or negative?
Negative.
I'm afraid it's almost always negative. And I think here's why, Mark. Third slide is because so many of us, when we see the word authority, our mind immediately goes to authoritarianism. And it's some guy that's raging, got a sledgehammer, and he's going to beat people over the head, and he's going to make people do something. Now, next slide. Who are some people who have abused authority in history or in the Bible?
Well,
your slide, Mark, I don't have the one that, I mean, you all have.
Yes.
Okay. You know, you look at Stalin, Hitler, and Mussolini, people during World War I, World War II, vicious guys, dominant people, killed all kinds of people. You think of Stalin the same, but you know, they're people in business, and some of you are in business. You know, Enron, MCI, I think this week about the Volkswagen. Somebody misused some authority in Volkswagen. Would you all agree with that? Somebody's going to hit, it's going to roll over misusing authority. Today, what we're going to do in this lesson, and by the way, we're combining two tonight. The first one, we're going to talk about leadership and authority, and then we're going to come back and talk about leadership styles. And one of the things I want all of you to do tonight is to really try to put yourself to the test, so to speak, and ask yourself, how do I envision authority? Those of you who are elders, those of you who are preachers, you're in positions of authority. How do you use that? And those of you who are not elders, you guys who hopefully in the future will be, when you think about if I stepped into a role and there's a role of authority, what does that mean? So we'll talk about some of that tonight. What we're going to do here in this lesson is look at spiritual leadership. We're going to acknowledge that leaders do have authority. By the way, you all are aware that there are some people that for the last 30 years have this big argument. Elders don't have any authority. They only have authority to be good examples. They don't have any authority at all. Well, we'll look at that in the Bible. We'll talk about in this lesson the proper use of authority. Next slide, Mark, we'll talk about the need of delegation of authority. We'll talk about some fallacious attempts to deny the authority given leaders. We'll talk about some challenges that leaders have, and then we'll talk about, hopefully, how do you respond to some of those. And so that's kind of where we're going to go in this lesson. Next slide. The reality is authority is vital everywhere in life. It's obviously God designed the home for there to be authority at home, although unfortunately a lot of people today don't believe that. You know, it's like you look at Joseph in Genesis 39:4-6, and Potiphar gave him headship over his house, everything except him. You think about socially, Romans 13:1-7, God ordained government. And you think about Pharaoh giving Joseph authority to get dispense the grain and the famine in Genesis 41:38-57, and you have examples of authority socially. And then you come back spiritually, and obviously the question is there authority? Well, we know there is with God, and then the next question comes, okay, what about church? So the whole point is that authority is vital wherever we are. Now, let's jump to spiritual authority on the next slide. The first point is that Christ has all authority. I don't need to talk to you all about that. You know it. What did Jesus say before he went to heaven? All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. And one of the things that I love about Jesus is that his teaching, you know, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, do you all remember what the statement was in Matthew 7:28-29?
He taught as one having authority and not as the scribes.
Yeah. What does that mean, Mark?
Well, the scribes would refer to a rabbi in the past, refer to another person, and it just got very complicated and convoluted, and Jesus just basically spoke God's truth as the one that had authority. He didn't base it on some rabbi before him.
Right. And I think not only that, but you know, a lot of the Pharisees and the scribes, they could tell you every jot and every tittle of the law. And they could be as meticulous about it as me. But you know what? The one problem they had was they didn't teach it with the concept of it being in their hearts, and other people had to have it in their hearts. And to you guys who preach, let me say something to you guys. If we're going to be preachers, it's more than just teaching a bunch of facts. And it's more than just getting people to believe a bunch of facts. But we need to be like Christ and teach with authority when we teach, because it has a tremendous impact.
over, he needs to preside over, he needs to have authority in his home and know how to wield that in the right way, and that, in essence, shows that he's prepared to step into the church and to wield authority in the church in a proper way. And so the home's kind of a training ground, but again, I emphasize the fact, notice, he had authority in his home, and he's going to have oversight and authority in the church. Next slide, Mark. 1 Thessalonians 5, 5:12-13. Notice he says to these Thessalonians, brethren, recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and esteem them very highly for their work's sake. By the way, the over you in the Lord is the same word that's in 1 Timothy 3, 5. So again, he's emphasizing that elders are in a position of authority in a congregation. The next passage, Mark, is 1 Timothy 5:17. Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor. Again, the focus in this passage, and by the way, this is the same root word in the Greek that's used in these passages. Here it's just in the perfect tense participle, but again, it means to superintend, to preside over. And then the next slide, Hebrews 13:17. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls. And of course, you elders at Flatwoods, one of the things you all asked me to address was this whole concept of submission. And interesting in this text that Paul says there are those who rule over the members. These Hebrew Christians have those who rule over them. And the word that's used here is the word that means, when he says you be submissive, it means to obey. And so he's saying to them, by the way, it's interesting, this word obey is the same word that's in James 3. And what's interesting, it's in the middle voice in the Greek language. Let me stop there, man. Does anybody know what middle voice in the Greek language means? You should be translated.
It's something that both you do and being acted on at the same time, like you kind of do to yourself, I guess.
Passive voice means somebody else is doing the action to you. Middle voice is something that you're doing of your own volition. You're making the choice to do it yourself. And so Paul says, obey those who rule over you. He's saying to the members, look, this is something that you have to make the choice to be obedient. It's by the way, for us in the church, you men who are elders, or those of you who will be in the future, it's not a sense, authority is not, I'm going to make you do this, I'm going to go back to that picture, the authoritarianism with a sledgehammer over your head, but the picture here is that people who are God's people and have the right kind of hearts, they see the need to submit themselves, or to be obedient themselves, and to be submissive. And of course he explains why, the elders are watching out for their souls, and I love the last part of this passage. He says, let them do it with joy, not with grief. And the hope is that Christians ought to be the kind of people that live in a way that make it easy for elders to have that authority and not to be miserable in doing it. So again, the concept of authority. Next thing, Mark, 1 Peter 5:1-4. And I'm going to focus on just the middle of this. Notice what he says, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers. That's that word of bishop again. Not by compulsion, but willingly. Not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. And then watch this. Because this is something, do elders have authority? Yes, but how do they use it? Not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And so, next slide, Mark. Here's kind of what this passage then is saying to shepherds in the church. That number one, elders are overseers. Again, the word bishop, the idea of a guardian or a superintendent, somebody who exercises oversight. I don't know how people can stand up and say, well, the Bible doesn't say elders have authority. Really? Yeah, it does. Secondly, it's not by compulsion, but willingly. They're not to be forced to be elders. They're not to feel like they're being forced. Rather, it comes from a desire that I want to serve the Lord, I want to serve his people. And I love the church, and I want to help people go to heaven. The next phrase, not being lords over those entrusted to you, it's think about Christ. So I'm going to stop right there a second and make some observations. For all of us, when we think about authority for a leader in the church, question number one, does Christ have all authority, yes or no?
Yes.
Sure he does. Question number two, is Christ, well, let me say it differently. Would you think somebody, is there anybody but Jesus that we could look at that we say, man, he has a right to be an authoritarian, you know? You can look at him and say, well, it's all he is, the world's his, the church's his, you know, he could be a dictatorial tyrant and just say, just do, and you know what, I'm going to beat you up, I'm going to make you miserable, that kind of thing. But when you look at Christ, with all the authority that he has, then the question comes, how does he use that authority? Make some observations. Absolutely. Lovingly. What else?
He does it sacrificially. You know, he...
Sacrificially? Amen. What else?
It's always in the best interest, in our best interest.
Always the best interest for us. What else? Same way.
and have him talk to us while he's back here.
Yep, let me see if I've got him.
Oh,
yeah,
we're
good. We're glad. I don't have
him. can I put it through here?
We can. It's already on its way back up. So I just call him back real quick here.
I know what you did.
It's like, what, 7:30? Like, why would it be scheduled for 7:30? I'll have to check one.
You rang.
Yes, I guess our thing's restarting, so we can try then, or you can keep talking through this. Either way.
No, I'm coming back. I have feedback. Let's see if it connects.
Okay.
Just a second. Yeah, I just decided randomly at 7:30 to do updates. I thought it'd be a good time.
Tell us on a good time.
If not listening.
Shall I just go ahead and do it on a call basis?
We'll be there in just a second. If it doesn't... Oh, it's shutting down. Yeah, let's go ahead and do it on a call basis. Can we put these through the speaker?
Yes, change
okay,
room. So plug it in there.
Call basis here. Let's see if it works.
Yeah, just keep talking to us and we'll put it... Hold on real quick. Let's put this through the speaker and then we'll call over here. So. Is that good?
Okay.
Okay, go ahead and talk. Hello?
Among yourselves, 1 Thessalonians 5:13. They are counted worthy of double honor. They're esteemed by the brethren. They're not terrified. They're not despised by the brethren, but they're respected. Godly overseers watch out for people's souls, Hebrews 13:17. They're not lords over the members, 1 Peter 5:3. They imitate Christ, the chief shepherd. It's interesting in Proverbs 29:2, y'all might want to write that passage down. Proverbs 29:2, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, the people groan. And I think that's an interesting text to lay alongside the New Testament picture of elders and how elders lead and use their authority. If a man is a godly man, and again, obviously you have somebody who's a rebel in congregation and he's not going to rejoice. But it's fascinating when the righteous are in authority. Somebody's in authority, but he uses that with compassion for the people. He genuinely cares for their best interest. The people are going to rejoice. On the other hand, when misunderstood or misused, somebody in authority can wreak havoc on people. Look at Paul. He said in Acts 26:12, while thus occupied as I journeyed to Damascus with authority and commission from the chief priest, I had authority, and man, I was using it. I was going to arrest, and I was going to have convicted, and I was going to have killed every Christian I could. Well, that's not the way to use authority. Third point, Mark, is that elders have authority. Before you put anything else up, talk to me, folks, about how elders have authority.
Well, they can't trump God. They can't,
okay.
Like,
great comment. They can't trump God. Do we have any authority in setting doctrine?
No.
Yes or no?
No.
The Lord has all of that. But elders have authority in seeing that Christ's authority is respected and obeyed. We don't have authority to make new laws. We have no right to alter God's authority. Elders, preachers, Christians who hold up the hands of others should encourage members to obey the Lord's teaching and to love and respect Him. Talk with me about some expedient matters where elders have authority.
Worship times.
I didn't hear.
Worship times.
Worship times. Could the elders at Flatwoods say, we're going to meet on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock? Is that when y'all meet at 10 o'clock?
9:45 for Bible study.
Yeah, 9:45. Could the elders at Flatwoods say, 9:45 on Sunday? Well, they do. Could the elders at Cerrito say, we're going to meet at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning?
Yeah.
Could the people mark South, what is it?
South
Fork?
Point.
just putting guidance from them. Okay, I think that's enough on that one. The next point is that those in authority can delegate. God delegated authority to Jesus. Jesus delegated authority to the apostles. Elders can delegate authority to the ministers and members. Now, you know, we talked about the last time about Moses learning that concept about organization, and Jethro saying in Deuteronomy 1:15-18, you know, hey, you need some help here. The apostles knew that in Acts 6. They listened to the Grecian Jews who were saying our widows are being neglected, and there's a lesson there for leaders in the church today. By the way, it's fascinating that the apostles listened to that problem and said, okay, we're going to delegate that to some people from your own group so that they'll be sure that they're cared for. And elders, deacons, preachers, Bible class teachers, all of us need to learn from that, that people who have authority can delegate. Now, can delegate in a way that's in violation of God's will. For example, the elders can't delegate and say, okay, Julie, you're going to preach the sermon Sunday morning. The elders don't have that right. So it's got to be always within the confines of God's will. The next point is that elders must seek to be impactful examples so they won't hurt their influence and their authority. Ladies and gentlemen, let me just encourage all of us something. Any of us who are members of the church, all of us who've been members for a lot of years in the church, people are looking at us, they're looking to us, and you know what? We need to be deeply concerned about being examples, and elders especially. Got to be examples of commitment and of faithfulness in worship. I sometimes hear people talk about elders in the church in places that don't go to church but one time a week. And I'm like, wait a minute, what are we talking about? Elders got to be examples of holy living and of honesty and integrity and loving their mate and devotion to her and to their family. And guidance and discipline of children. And I simply remind all of us that people will look up to elders and preachers and deacons and godly ladies. And here's the seriousness of this, folks. If we stumble, we can take a ton of people with us if we're not careful. We may not take a ton, but you know what? We can take a number of people who look at us and who just throw up their hands and say, you know what? I trusted him, and look how he is, and you know, it's just ridiculous. And folks, I see this kind of thing happen. I could name you examples in the last months I've seen of preachers, of elders, of preachers' wives, and God help us to be deeply concerned about trying to live a life that's an impeccable example. Are we perfect? No. Are we going to sin? Yeah. But you know what? We really need to be concerned. If I'm somebody that has impact on others, I don't want to dishearten and discourage a lot of other people. I don't want to dishonor Christ and the church. I don't want to cause young people to put their hands and say, well, you know, all those people are just a bunch of hypocrites anyway. And folks, I have seen tragedies in church leaders in things like stealing. I'm talking about stealing money from the church treasury. I've seen church leaders committing adultery, drinking and using drugs, being dishonest in business dealings, and I just appeal to all of us, and I'm talking to me as well as all of you. I appeal to us to say, you know what? We've got authority. We also have to have example, and we've got to be deeply, deeply concerned how we use that example. And never hurt somebody to take them away from Christ. Now, the last point on this slide is that elders are going to make mistakes. And two observations about this. I have on your slide, they should readily acknowledge those mistakes. One of the things that I think can help elders is having a multiplicity of elders can protect from a lot of unwise decisions. And there's a lot of times when you have if we try to hide behind the cloak of authority and don't admit our mistakes, we're going to lose their respect in a hurry. Now, here's a question for you guys. This is not for you ladies. Guys, have you ever made a decision when you didn't listen to good advice from your wife or your children, and you went ahead and did it, and it was one of those, she may not have said it, but it was one of those I told you so moments, you know what I'm talking about? Anybody got an example? Okay, I will. Dick and I lived in Virginia, and this was during Jimmy Carter's presidency. You know, he was trying to get everybody to buy little cars, and cars that got tremendous gas mileage, and there was a guy down the road from us that had a Volkswagen for sale. And it was an old Volkswagen, and I thought, well, I can get that car, and I can save money, get a lot better gas mileage than what I get in my car I had. And Vicki cautioned me. She said, I don't think you ought to do that. Well, what I did, don't you? I went ahead and bought it, and within a month it blew up. And she was dead on. But you know what? When you make decisions like that, and sometimes it may blow up your face, if you're big enough and humble enough to just say, you know what, I'm sorry, I blew it. People will have some latitude for you, but if you stand up kind of haughtily and how dare you question my authority and come back at people like that, you're going to lose them in a hurry. Now, any comments before we go on? Okay, next slide, 17. Here's some fallacious arguments that people have made, and you all just be aware of these, so you're going to run into them sometimes, and hopefully we can use what we've already studied tonight to kind of ask people, look, could we just sit down and see what Jesus says about this, and what he says about the church? But number one, some people are going to say, elders have no authority, they're just examples. Well, if you look at our text, they emphasize that elders do have authority, and they ought to be examples, but these are not mutually exclusive things. They go hand in hand. Number two, somebody says, I'll submit to God, but I'll submit to no man. By the way, I've heard people say marriage concept, and I've heard people say that's the church concept. But it's really interesting. I hear somebody say that, and I'm just like, really? You really believe that? You're not going to submit to any man? Okay. You're not going to submit to the government? You're not going to pay taxes? Because if you're paying taxes, what are you doing? Well, you're submitting to somebody. You're going to arrest your employer? Well, no, I don't submit to any man. Really? Sometimes people are just making a very emotional argument. They've heard, and we need to help them understand the implications of it. And of course, the same thing's true in the church. If somebody says, I'm not going to submit to any man, in reality, they're saying that they're putting themselves in direct opposition to the Lord and are going to be sinful. Here's another one. I'd like to hear you all answer this. Some people say the eldership concept is unbiblical. Any thoughts? Yeah, the Bible says a lot about elders.
What is this hinge on? Are you saying the fact that that they make a decision together, like all of them?
Yeah, it's the whole concept that a person, Mark, doesn't like the idea of an eldership of men over a congregation, and that concept. I don't know what all the roots are about why people will hold that. Somebody said that a minute ago about the whole concept of elders. Obviously, God ordained elders to be in a congregation. We know in Philippians 1, we know in Titus 1, every time you see it's there's to be a plurality of elders in a congregation. What is that? You can call it whatever you want. You can call it the group of elders. You can call it the body of elders. You can call it the eldership. But it's fascinating. 1 Timothy 4:14, listen to this. Do not lay neglect the gift that's in you, which was given to you by prophecy, with the laying on of hands of the eldership. That's the New King James. Or the King James used the word, y'all remember, presbytery. And the NIV there uses the phrase the body of elders, or the American Standard uses presbytery. Any of you have the English Standard? I don't have it here handy. Anybody have it? Nathan's probably got it on his phone.
What's the scripture?
1 Timothy 4:14.
Do not neglect the gift. That's the Council of Elders.
The what?
Council of Elders.
Council of Elders.
The Council of Elders? Okay. All right. So the whole concept, you know, when somebody says, well, the idea of eldership is unbiblical, well, no, it's not. You see it throughout. Now, let's look at some key considerations from what we have looked at here tonight and kind of pull all this together a little bit. Point number one, authority brings responsibility. If you remember what Jesus said in John 21, verses 15 and 16, after poor old Peter, for about 5 weeks, beat himself up and felt like he was unworthy and so forth. And, you know, Jesus questioned, do you love me? And Jesus was asking the question, do you have agape love for me? And Peter's response was, I phileo love you, I love you like a friend. And the second time, the same question, same response. The third time, Jesus asked him, do you have phileo love for me? And when Peter said, well, you know I do, Jesus' response was, well, feed my lambs. And the whole concept that men who step into the role of leadership watch for members' souls, so authority stepping into that role brings responsibility, and second point, it brings accountability, which simply says, you remember the statement back earlier that they give an account or they're going to answer the members, Hebrews 13:17. And I think that shouldn't surprise us. You look at Luke 16, the rich man had Abraham explained to him, you're where you are because in your life you received good things, and but you didn't care about others, and now you're where you are. The five and two and the one talent man had to give an account, and those of us who preach, we're going to have to give an account for how we handle and how claim the word of God, and leaders are going to have to do the same thing. Number three, the proper use of authority requires strong commitment. 1 Peter 4:19, let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to Him in doing good as to the faithful Creator. And folks, it just takes a whole lot of commitment to overcome the fear to lead. You younger guys, let me encourage you. There's a lot of things you face in life, and you want to kind of do it. It's got to start with your heart. And I will tell you this, 30 years ago, when I came to Washington Avenue, twice the size of congregation where I'd been, they had had some influence by some of these guys who were trying to stand off to the left, and I was concerned. And, you know, God's going to bless us, God's going to help us, and I encourage us not to let fear stifle us, but rather have a commitment that says, "What I'll let God make of me what He can and use me in His cause." Slide 19. Bible directions have to be followed. We all know 1 Peter 4:11, if a man speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God, and I would use that passage and come back and say, if it can lead, let him lead by God's direction. Number two on this slide, there are limits to human authority. Leaders, as I said earlier, are always under the authority of Christ. They're always under His spirit authority. people who feel, you know, if I'm going to be an elder, I got to neglect my family. I can't work at my job. I can't go on vacation. Or, you know, if I'm going to be an elder, I'm perfect. Well, all of us can pack up and go home if that's true tonight, because none of us are perfect and we can't get it. And here's the point. God wants people to be good. He wants people to give with themselves, to shepherd, but he doesn't expect us to be perfect. He doesn't expect us to do it all. He doesn't expect us to go beyond what we can do. I want to give you an example. My dad is 95. He's still an elder in the church. And my dad is so committed to the congregation and Stanton that he feels guilty even to go see his family. He wouldn't even go on vacation because he feels obligation and that sense of responsibility to the congregation. And I simply say to you guys, you know, that's really asking too much of ourselves or each other for eldership. And so I caution you that we don't do that. Any comments before we go on?
Steve, this is a little bit off track. This is a little bit off track, but how much time do you think an elder should reasonably be away from the congregation and still serve as an elder? I mean, if we get to the point where we're going to spend the winter in Florida or something, you know, what do you think is a reasonable gauge on that?
You know, Mark, I guess my response would be the individual congregation's got to make that decision. You know, we're in a situation today where people obviously can do things electronically like we're doing by email. My elders, well, we shoot emails back and forth every day. But you know, I guess here's my thought. You know, if a guy goes in a situation on a vacation, I'm not going to say how long that vacation is. If it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, that's one thing. But if a guy's gone 6 months a year, I really have to ask yourself. We have some snowbirds here, and this week they're already headed south. And, you know, can a man really have the influence that he ought to have and be in that situation? I think there's a real concern about that. That's just my opinion. Anybody else want to make comments about that? Love to hear from you.
Well, it seems like the elders were involved with the flock.
I didn't catch you, Mark.
The elders are among the flock, you know, and all of the passages we look at, not that they're there half the time, so.
I think that's a valid point. Now, but the other side of it, though, you got to be really careful. If, for example, if a man's sick for several weeks, you know, does that mean he's got to resign because he's sick? You know, the whole concept is to have an eldership, and so it's not, you know, it's not all upon one man. But, Mark, back to what your question, I'd have some discomfort in that. I would not encourage a guy to do that if he was not an elder and he said, you know, I'd like to be an elder, but I'm going to be gone 6 months a year. I think I would encourage him to rethink that interest. Other comments?
It'll be hard to rule your physical family if you're away for 6 months a year.
I understand. And yet, let's be fair, there are some guys who work away from home in those kind of situations, or guys in the military, you know. So, you know, there are some extenuating circumstances to think about, but again, just encourage a man to be involved in the lives of the people, know the people, love the people, and yet to understand this is not about 24/7, and I can't have my own life, and I can't be with my family, and I can't be with my children, I can't be with my grandchildren. That's totally inhumane expectation. Any other comments before we go on? Okay, slide 20, Mark. I want to say to you that when you look at the concept of authority, we're going to do something this needs to be carried out the next week, and a man maybe doesn't really completely with all his heart agree with the decision, and he's given the responsibility to go do something, and he just drags his feet because he kind of doesn't like the decision. Or it could be a lack of truthfulness, or it could be, an elder who's almost like a child has a mindset in meetings and so forth that it's got to be my way or no way. And, all of these kind of things are challenges to authority of other leaders, and there needs to be respect in an eldership. Men need to work together. They need to listen to each other. They need to care what's best for the eldership leading the congregation. They need to care what's best for the congregation, and always the decisions are made. Hey, how does this fit with God's will? The second thing is challenges from members to elders' authority, and there can be complaints. There are people who make ungrounded complaints. There are people who elders make a decision, and there's strong disagreement with that decision, and members can go around with other members and busybody and try to turn people against the elders. There may be people who try to raise up special interest groups. There can be attacks on elders' character. There can be people who could in a congregation lead open revolt. And something for you preachers today, guys, if you're not an elder, I would say to you that good, faithful, supportive gospel preachers, when members try to lead and against the elder's authority, you guys need to stand up in the pulpit and call people's hand on it. And you need to call people to respect the Lord and His will. And ladies, you can be a part of this, and as I mentioned about Aaron and her the other day, good, faithful members of a congregation, when there are people that are trying to lead discord, there are people trying to lead open revolt in a congregation, good, faithful members need to go to those people and tell them to knock it off. And it's amazing sometimes that can have tremendous impact, more so than the elders having to challenge those people. And I would just encourage every one of us to hold up the hands of leaders in the congregation. Obviously, lastly on this slide, there can be challenges to authority from society. And, I mean, we all sit here tonight and say, what's that going to be? And my response is, I don't know. We may face regulatory attacks come down the road. There are people on the left who would do nothing better than our nation who speaks out against homosexuality, would lose their tax exempt status, who might be threatened to be arrested if they prove that. There can be individual court decisions. There can be fringe groups on the outside that are just unconvinced and do all kinds of crazy things. By the way, there are some of these things, when I say from society, it can be some people who are very anti-establishment society. It can be from members of congregations. What's the church? Think of their name right now. That goes around, and when men have died in war, they have military services for them, and some of these guys will come in.
West Carl Baptist.
Vets come in on motorcycles and so forth, and this church group comes and opposes them. Anybody remember what they're called?
Yes.
By the way, I heard recently, I talked to an elder, and there's some guy they go to towns and walk up and knock on somebody's door and ask them what they are religiously, and somebody snaps, they look at them and say, "You're going to hell." Have you all heard of that?
No.
This group, I think they're over on the East Coast in Virginia or North Carolina. I think it's Virginia. But anyway, from what I understand, I've never looked it up, I don't intend to look it up. It's just absurd to me. But on YouTube, they do these things, and they post it on YouTube. And recently, they came to a town where I held a meeting last year, and they had a meeting this year, and these people came to town and started doing that. And I'm telling you, the church in that community had it. Well, I'll tell y'all where it is. Y'all know the church where Eddie Kraft preached in Elizabethton?
Yeah.
It's a great congregation of people. And they've had all but 40 years ago when I was in Virginia, that congregation had tremendous respect in that community. And I'm going to tell you, it untold damage to the name of the church in that community. And so, you know, sometimes you can have things that come from members internally, but sometimes it can come from society or even from other congregations who've got some kind of agenda. And, you know, we need to be concerned about our reputation in the community. We need to be concerned about moral changes in culture. But folks, we got to stand up for what's right. And if we teach what's right, there may be challenges from society, and our only response is, so be it. We can't compromise or condone or give in or become silent about moral issues because the world doesn't like it. Okay, last thing in this lesson. How do leaders respond to challenges? And I want to hear three statements about this. Number one, is elders to determine the merit of a challenge. If elders are challenged, if preachers, if you're challenged, deacons are challenged, sit down and think about it. Is it legitimate? If it is, just admit it. Sometimes that's hard to do. And you know, sometimes we may make a decision that we think is a wise decision, and the people may think it's unrighteous, unjust. You know, we need to listen, even though sometimes we feel like it's a challenge to authority. Maybe it's not as much a challenge to authority as honest to goodness feel like it's a legitimate issue. Number two, if there's things that we need to correct, correct it. Number three, if it's invalid, then, you know, how do I react to that in a Christian way? How do I react to that in a way that doesn't come across dictatorial? How do I react in that in a way that that the Lord would have me do? And so my encouragement would be, you know, if a challenge is invalid, how are we going to address it? Number two, try not to be reactionary and look foolish. Number three, don't personalize the event as much as you can. Try not to personalize it. That's not easy. Number four, honest to goodness, try to respect people, and even if they're challenging your authority. And lastly, ask what would the master do? What would Jesus do if he were in this situation? And I a lot of times we look at the Lord in passages like Matthew 23. We look at him like at the beginning of his ministry with the money changers. We look at him at the end with the money changers. And some preachers come away, or some elders come away, and if somebody challenges authority, man, we're going to let them have it. You know, it's fascinating to me that the people that the Lord, if you want to use the phrase, let them have it. It people who were in positions of leadership, it was people who were in positions of claiming to be very spiritual, and people who were hypocritical to the core. And we certainly need to be careful. You know, if somebody challenges authority, and maybe it's a person who just doesn't know, doesn't understand, we can do an enormous amount of damage if we handle it improperly. So, those are the three things I would while a long time and study Jesus and look at his authority and look how he wielded his authority. Look what he says to us in the home about the kind of husband we ought to be and those kind of things and say, you know what? He's teaching me about how to use that authority in a way that that honors him, in a way that brings respect from members, in a way that causes members to know that they're loved and cared for and that we have their very at heart. And so those are the things I think that are critical for when we talk about leadership and authority. Okay, questions, thoughts, observations, comments?
I think one of the hardest things you mentioned there was not to personalize these things. If someone comes, they catch you in the lobby and they start letting you have it in front of the whole congregation, basically. And that's happened here at times. It's kind of hard not to personalize it.
Yeah, I know. And did you say, Mark, if they do it where?
In the, like in the foyer of the building.
Yeah. I would say to all of you, the place in the world to have a business meeting where a conversation is in that foyer. If somebody's got a problem, take it to a private place to discuss. Don't do it in the foyer. And I would say this to you elders. If you have something that comes up and you're concerned about it and maybe some things have happened, don't discuss that in situations where you can be heard by kids or by members